11 in the negative instruction, prema, and a few other things. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, prema is defined as intensified bhava. That is, when bhava is intensified and the feelings of affection, regard, or attachment, mamata, for Krishna increases, it is called prema. In the Ujjvala Nilamani, describes prema as bhava bandhana, tie of affection that does not break even in the face of circumstances which are sufficient to cause its break. For example, Chandravali knows that Krishna loves Radha more intensely than herself. This should be sufficient to turn her mind from Krishna, but she loves him passionately. The reason why the tie of prema is unbreakable is that prema does not, even for a moment, seek the happiness of the self, and there is no price it is not willing to pay for the happiness of the beloved. So prema is really the beginning of that. Prema is actual love for Krishna, and love is defined here, that even in the presence of causes which should break the loving tie or affection, that it does not break. So that's actually prema. Chaitanya Charitamrita defines prema as a transcendental state which the wise cannot understand. Even the wise cannot understand. The words, the mental states and the modes of behavior of devotee whose attain prema are all beyond our ordinary understanding. This is Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 23:21. That bhava softens a heart completely. When that bhava softens a heart completely, it becomes endowed with a great feeling of possessiveness in relation to the Lord. It becomes very much condensed and intensified. It is called prema, love of Godhead, by learned scholars. This is from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1.4.1. Srila Jiva Goswami has stated about prema that the positive and direct nature of prema is this extremely deepened state of bhava. That is, the deepened state of bhava bhakti is prema bhakti. Two, the other two aspects, namely the complete softening of the heart and the extreme attachment for Krishna, are the two secondary natures of prema. So at the stage of prema, the heart becomes completely softened and there's extreme attachment for Krishna. Sri Mukunda Das Goswami has stated, the same bhava is called prema when it deepens to its maximum. This denseness or condensed state of bhava is the primary nature or characteristic of prema. The difference between bhava and prema is that bhava softens the heart, but prema softens the heart completely and overwhelmingly. In bhava, the heart is softened by desire for attainment of Sri Krishna, the desire for satisfying the desires of Krishna, which are agreeable to him, and the desires for friendship with him. In prema, the heart is most deeply and overwhelmingly softened by an extreme attachment and a feeling of mindness for Krishna. With the appearance of a superior aspect of bhava, namely prema, the previous bhavas also continue simultaneously. So another verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. When one develops an unflinching sense of ownership or possessiveness in relation to Lord Vishnu, or in other words, when one thinks of Vishnu and no one else to be the only object of love, such an awakening is called bhakti, devotion, by exalted persons like Bhishma, Prahlad, Uddhava, and Narada. This verse, quoted from the Narada Pancharatra, is found in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Any questions about this? So, at the stage of prema, one's only experience is that of pure love for Krishna. And that experience is overwhelming affection for and attachment to Krishna. You can read a little bit from Madhurya Kandambini about prema. Well, actually, first I'll read a little something from the Srimad Bhagavatam, describing Narada Muni's experience of prema. As soon as I began to meditate upon the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead, with my mind transformed in transcendental love, tears rolled down my eyes, and without delay, the Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, appeared on the lotus of my heart. So this is from Canto 1, Chapter 6, Conversation between Narada and Vyas. And Prabhupada writes in the purport, the word bhava is significant here. This bhava stage is attained after one has transcendental affection for the Lord. The initial stage is called shraddha, or liking for the Supreme Lord. And in order to increase that liking, one has to associate with pure devotees of the Lord. The third stage is to practice prescribed rules and regulations of devotional service. This will dissipate all sorts of misgivings and remove all personal deficiencies that hamper progress in devotional service. When all misgivings and personal deficiencies are removed, there is a standard faith in transcendental matter, and the taste for it increases in greater proportion. This stage leads to attraction, and after this there is bhava, or the prior stage of unalloyed love for God. All the above different stages are but different stages of development of transcendental love. Being so surcharged with transcendental love, there comes a strong feeling of separation, which leads to eight different kinds of ecstasies. Tears from the eyes of a devotee is an automatic reaction, and because Sri Narada Muni in his previous birth attained that stage very quickly after his departure from home, it was quite possible for him to perceive the actual presence of the Lord, which he tangibly experienced by his developed spiritual senses without material tinge. Text 17. And here the word is Premativara Nirvina. Premativara Nirvina. Pulakango Ti Nirvita. Ananda Samflave Lino. Na Pashyam Udbayam Mune. Is anyone taking Srimad Bhagavatam here? Are you studying this in Srimad Bhagavatam, this chapter? Oh. So, prema, love. Ovya Ativara, excessive love. Ovya, so translation, Ovyasadev, at that time, being exceedingly overpowered by feelings of happiness, every part of my body became separately enlivened, being absorbed in an ocean of ecstasy, I could not see both myself and the Lord. Purport. Spiritual feelings of happiness and intense ecstasies have no mundane comparison. Therefore, it is very difficult to give expression to such feelings. We can just have a glimpse of such ecstasy in the words of Sri Narada Muni. Each and every part of the body of senses has its particular function. After seeing the Lord, all the senses become fully awakened to render service unto the Lord, because in the liberated state, the senses are fully efficient in serving the Lord. As such, in that transcendental ecstasy, it so happened that the senses became separately enlivened to serve the Lord. This being so, Narada Muni lost himself in seeing both himself and the Lord simultaneously. He has a special position. As a Radhatmika Bhava, Bhakti. Well, he's a special incarnation worshipping the Lord in opulence. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find he's incarnated as Shivas Thakur. And in that conversation between Swarup Damodar and Shivas Thakur, Shivas Thakur is explaining about the grandeur of Vaikuntha after seeing the Mahalakshmi, her great, the Hera Panchami festival, where Mahalakshmi comes by in great opulence, and Srivas Thakur explains that, you know, what, just see the opulence of the goddess of fortune, you know, on a jeweled throne surrounded by servants. Her servants are chastising even the servants of Lord Narayan, of Lord Jagannath. But then Swarup Damodar counters and says, actually the real opulence comes from Krishna Loka, from Goloka Vrindavan, where everything there is made out of Chintamani gems. And there, even the goddesses of fortune are wearing them on their feet, etc. That all the trees there are desire trees. All the residents there are the gopis of the god, supreme goddesses of fortune. So, yes, he's in the mood of our reverence. We shouldn't think it's something bad. Oh, the poor Narada Muni. Stuck in, you know, our irreverence. Did everyone, did you get, you didn't check your name, Bhakti Chak. Oh, you checked your name, but you checked the wrong one. So let's read something from the Madhurya Kandambini. You can begin reading Raghavirbhu from the Lord first reveals his beauty to the eyes of the devotee. Chapter 8.
The Lord reveals first his beauty to the eyes of the devotee in this remarkable condition. On account of the sweetness of that beauty, all the senses in the mind take on the quality of eyes, and obstacles such as paralysis, shaking, and tears are generated. From this, the devotee swoons. To console the devotee, the Lord next reveals his fragrance to the nostrils of the devotee. And by this, the devotee's senses take on the quality of the nose in order to smell. Again, the devotee swoons in bliss. The Lord then reveals his sonorous voice to the devotee's ears. All the senses become like ears to hear. And for the third time, the devotee faints. The Lord then mercifully gives the touch of his lotus foot, his hands, and his breast to the devotee. And the devotee experiences the Lord's fresh youthfulness. To those in the mood of service, he bestows his lotus feet on their heads. To those in the mood of friendship, he grasps their hands with his. Of those in the mood of parental affection, with his hand he wipes away tears. And those in conjugal love, in the conjugal mood, he embraces, touching with his hands and chest. Then, the devotee's senses all take on the sense of touch, and the devotee faints for a fourth time. The Lord then restores him by giving him the taste from his own lips. This, however, is revealed only to those in the conjugal mood. The devotee's senses take on the sense of taste, and he faints for a fifth time. This blissful swoon is so deep that the Lord must revive him by giving his audarya, generosity. Audarya refers to the state in which simultaneously all of the Lord's qualities, his beauty, fragrance, sound, touch, and taste, all suddenly manifest themselves to the devotee's various senses. At that time, prema, which understands the indications of the Lord, increases to the extreme. And though there is a corresponding extreme increase in the craving, this increased prema, becoming like the moon, then creates in the devotee's heart a friction amongst the simultaneous emotions, a conflict of 100 waves of the ocean of bliss, and becomes the beautiful ruling deity of his mind in that condition. At this time, prema bestows its specific power by which one can experience the different tastes simultaneously without conflict. One should not think that the intense craving of the mind will cause dilution of the various tastes. Rather, all of the senses attaining the inconceivable, astonishing, extraordinary quality to perform the functions of the other senses to appreciate the Lord's various qualities give more intensely to the taste. In these matters, one cannot use material arguments evolved from material experiences. These inconceivable conditions of prema are not subject to mundane logic. Then the Lord, seeing that the sweetness of his beauty, fragrance, sound, touch, taste, and audarya are being supplied unlimitedly to the devotee, like raindrops to the beak of a chataka bird trying to taste the totality, he considers, why am I holding so many wonderful qualities to myself? To let the devotee enjoy them, the Lord distributes his Kripa Shakti, also called Anugraha, the superintendent of all the Shaktis, which is situated like an empress in the middle of a lotus, whose eight petals are the eight Shaktis, Vimala, Utkarshani, Jnana, Kriya, Yoga, Pravi, Satya, and Isha. This Shakti is called Vatsalya, affection, in relation to his devotees in the mood of servant, dasa, etc., And it's called karunya, compassion, in relation to the devotees in conjugal. This Kripa Shakti decorates the self in the eyes of the Lord. By this all-pervading Shakti, the element of the Lord's free will appears in the devotees and causes astonishment even in those who have realized Paramatma. By this energy, the one quality called Bhakta Vatsalya, affection to his devotees, like an emperor, rules over the other auspicious constitutional qualities of Satya, Socha, Daya, and Tapas. The condemned qualities of illusion, laziness, error, intense lust, fickleness, arrogance, envy, violence, exertion, lamentation, dishonesty, anger, longing, fear, Vishva-Vikrama, partiality, and dependency on others are not present in the body of the Lord. By the request of the Kripa Shakti, however, these qualities become present sometimes in the various avatars and are realized by their devotees. But at this time, these faults become excellent qualities.
Go ahead now. You can read.
Attain the power to taste all those bestowed qualities of the world, and taste each one, the devotee ascends to higher and higher peaks of astonishing experience, and his heart melts on his incessant realization of the Lord's unheard of Bhakta Vatsalya, affection for his devotee. Then the Lord, displaying his wonderful nature, says, "O best of devotees, many births, you have given up wife, house, and wealth for my sake, endured the miseries of cold, wind, hunger, thirst, and pain, tolerated the contempt of other men, taken to a life of begging. In payment for all your sacrifice, I cannot give you anything. I have become your debtor. Since lordship over the whole earth in the post of demigod and mystic powers are unsuitable for you, how can I give them to you? One cannot give grass and straw, the enjoyment of cows, to a spiritual personality such as you. Though I am unconquerable, I have been conquered by you. You have become my shelter." Hearing the sweet, affectionate words of the Lord, the devotee says, "O Lord, Master, Ocean of Mercy, you glanced upon me while I was being bitten by an array of crocodiles, the infinite miseries of endless births and deaths, amidst the terrifying current of material existence. Lord, transcendental to all the material planets, whose butter-like heart melts as it manifests mercy, Original spiritual master, destroyer of ignorance and lust by manifesting the Sudarshan chakra of your wonderful form. You have pierced those crocodiles and freed me from the clutches of your teeth. To fulfill my desire to serve your lotus feet, you placed the syllables of your mantra in my ears. You destroyed my suffering. You purified me by the process of constant hearing, chanting, and remembering your qualities and name, and made me understand how to perform service to yourself through the association of your devotees. I am unintelligent, the lowest of the low, and even one day have not done you service. Such a miserly, selfish person deserves to be punished. Contrary to this, however, showing your very self to me, you've made me drink nectar. You've mortified me by saying that you have become my debtor. Now I am thinking what to do. I would be presumptuous to ask you to pardon all of my offenses, 5, 7, 8, 1,000, or 1,000,000. I can definitely say it must be more than 100,000,000,000,000. But let me all the fruits of my past activities receive and yet to be received. Previously, I compared your dark limbs to the monsoon cloud, the blue water lily, and to the sapphire. I compared your effulgent face to the moon, and your 10 feet to newly sprouted leaves. Now, these analogies seem like a pile of burnt mustard seeds compared to a golden mountain, or like chickpea in comparison to a touchstone. Like a jackal in comparison to a lion, or a mosquito in comparison to Garuda. By my poor intelligence, I have clearly committed offense to you. Such inept poetry meant as praise unto yourself is accepted by the common people. I am like an unsettled cow, threatened by the sudden appearance of your form. But I cannot defile the desire tree of your beauty, even with my destructive comparisons.
Shall we send her?
In this way, the lady praises the Lord, and the Lord, becoming more pleased with the lady, reveals all that is suitable for one's particular relation to the Lord, imbued with excellent blessing. Shri Vrindavan, the desire tree, the master of the tree, the most dear daughter of Rupa Varma, who associates such as Sarita and her servant, his own friends such as Subal, and Kalimanas such as the magic Chiki, the Jananda River, Govardhan, forests such as Jagira, and Ishvara Giri, all the mothers, fathers, brothers, friends, and servants there, and the houses of the Lord submerges the body in the enchanting tidal wave of bliss, and then disappears with his entourage. Recovering consciousness after some moments, the devotee, anxious to see the Lord again, opens his eyes, and not seeing the Lord because he is crying. Was I merely dreaming? No, I was not dreaming, because I had neither drowsiness nor any contamination in my eyes from sleep. Was it some hallucination? No, for an hallucination does not give such bliss. Or was it through some defect in the mind? No, because all the symptoms of unsteady mind are absent. Was it the fulfillment of some material desire? No fancy, no material fancy, but every approach that I have seen. Was it the momentary meeting with the Lord? No, because it's completely different from all previous visions of the world that I remember. In this way, the devotee remains in uncertainty. Lying upon the dusty earth, he prays constantly for the same experience. But telling it, he laments, rolls on the ground, weeps, roots his own body, faints, recovers, stands and sits, runs about, and wails like a madman. Sometimes he remains silent on the stage, and sometimes like a social misfit, he fails to perform his daily military duties. Like a person possessed of spirits, he talks in the meaning. Unto a devoted friend who comes asking privately what is the matter, he explains what his experience. When his friend explains that lost by good fortune, a direct meeting with the Lord, satisfied, he recovers himself and becomes happy. But then again he laments, no longer do I have that association. Was it a shower of mercy from some great devotee of the Lord upon this unhappy soul? Or was it by mere chance? Or was it the result of some past honest endeavor? Or perhaps it was simply the causeless mercy of the Lord? By some indescribable fortune I had attained the Lord, but then, because of great offense, I have lost him again. Without life, without intelligence, I cannot ascertain the truth. Where shall I go? What shall I do? By what means? Who to ask? I was completely vacant, without soul, without shelter, scorched by a conflagration. The whole world gazes upon me, leaves me about me, giving up this worldly association. I will live in solitude for a time.
Haribo, wake up. What's up?
Everyone's entering into a trance.
Doing this, he laments further. Lotus faced Lord, holding streams of nectar, bedecked with fragrant garlands, which scent all the forests, attracting swarms of vibrating bees. Just for a moment, may I serve your Lordship again. Having once tasted your sweetness, I cannot aspire for anything else. He begins to roll on the ground, breathe heavily, faint, and lose his mind. Suddenly seeing the Lord everywhere, he rejoices, embraces, laughs, dances, and sings. And when the Lord disappears again, he becomes filled with remorse and weeps. Behaving in this way, he withdraws his very life symptoms and loses awareness of whether he has a body or not. Then, not aware that his body has passed through the elements, he understands only that the desired Lord, the ocean mercy, has manifested himself, engaged him in service, and is leading him to his own house. Thus the devotee reaches the goal of life. So the same process
has been shown to us by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Leela. We see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the beginning, he was a scholar, but then after going to Gaya and seeing the lotus footprints of Lord Vishnu there, he began to develop symptoms of transcendental love. And there he met his spiritual master, Ishvara Puri, who was imbued with the loving sentiments from his spiritual master, Madhavendra Puri. And gradually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spent some years, 5 years, traveling and preaching, South India, going to Vrindavan. And then finally he settled in Jagannath Puri, and there gradually more and more performing Sankirtan and hearing from Swarup Damodar, and principally hearing from Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy about the pastimes of Krishna. Then he gradually developed more and more ecstatic love, or symptoms of ecstatic love for Krishna, until finally at the end we find him becoming completely maddened with love for Krishna, to the extent that one day when he was walking on the Jagannath Puri, the ocean there, the beach, then suddenly he saw the Chatraka Parvata, the sand dune there. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately began to running towards the sand dune. So he began to run towards the Parvata, reciting a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam that Govardhan Hill is the greatest of all the devotees because it provides for the cowherd boys nice caves and streams and lakes, and for the cows it provides nice grass. And this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's body, he saw he was moving at the speed of the mind, but then due to transformations of ecstasy, he slowed down to the speed of the wind. And he fell on the ground unconscious, and from his body, the pores of his body erupted like kandamba flowers, and blood and perspiration flowed from his body, from the pores of his body, and his body became soaked with his tears. And this time, all the devotees were coming to catch Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and had him, except for Bhagavan Acharya, who's lame, he's going very slowly, but all the other devotees are running. And this time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mind went to Vrindavan. And when he was in Vrindavan, he heard Krishna was with the cowherd girls, the gopis, and Srimati Radharani. Krishna was actually herding the cows with the cowherd boys on Govardhan Hill. And this time Krishna played on his flute, and all the cowherd girls came, headed by Srimati Radharani. So Krishna took Srimati Radharani to a cave, and the gopis there told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to start to engage Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in picking flowers to make a garland for Radha and Krishna. And at this time all the devotees caught up with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and when they saw him in this condition, they started to chant the Hare Krishna mantra and wash his body. And so he came to half external consciousness, and he said, "Why have you brought me here? You know, I was with Krishna on Govardhan Hill, and you've made this loud sound, and you've brought me back here." And this time, Paramananda Puri and Brahmananda Bharati, they caught up to the Guru. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to full external consciousness, and he started to lament. He started to say, "Why have you come here?" And they said, "Just to see you dance." And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt a little ashamed, and all of them went to the beach of Jagannath Puri, to the ocean, to take bath. So in this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gradually became more and more absorbed in transcendental love, so much so that at night, when Govinda would lock the doors of the Gambhira where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was living, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would sometimes rub his face against the walls out of feelings of separation from Krishna. And so at night, there was one devotee, he would stay with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and hold his feet on his lap, massage his feet, and then be there, but then he'd fall asleep. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sometimes have to cover him with his cloth, and then the devotees wake up again. But the ecstasy increased so much that although all the doors of the Gambhira would lock, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu somehow or another get out of the room. And one time he got out of the room and everyone was looking for him, and they found him at the place where all the cows were, one of the Singhadwara gate, surrounded by cows. And due to his ecstasy, all the limbs of his body had gone into his body, and he appeared to be like a round ball. And all the cows were licking his body at that time. So as it mentions that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Vrindavan at that time, and he saw Krishna and the gopis engaged in the rasa dance. And after the rasa dance, they all started to bathe in the Jamuna, and there was a fight between the gopis and Krishna. So that's described there. The pastimes of how eventually they went to the house, which was made out of flowers, and there Srimati Radharani and Krishna enjoyed a nice meal of fruit that was prepared by the gopis and all different types of sweetmeats, and they all took rest. So gradually, this is our purpose also. Vipralamba Seva, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to show us the method of developing love for Krishna and the mood of Vipralamba Seva, feeling separation from Krishna. So we ourselves, although, as we mentioned before, we're not undergoing some other type of meditation, our principal meditation is simply to develop enthusiasm for not only hearing and chanting about Krishna, for hearing about Krishna, and also for preaching. That is, as more we develop enthusiasm for chanting about Krishna or for preaching, then automatically the more Krishna will reveal himself, and that's called remembrance. So by trying to hear nicely and to try to preach nicely, then automatically one will come to the perfectional stage of life, of feeling constant separation from Krishna and the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the gopis. Any questions about this? I remember when I first started to do Sankirtan, due to the initial enthusiasm in book distribution, that I was somewhat successful. At least at that time, the first time we went out was we used to do it in 1968. We used to go to the University of Buffalo once a month because they had 70 Bhakti Godheads they had to distribute. No one knew how to do it, so they used to go up to the university there, and between four or five devotees, they used to distribute 70 Bhakti Godheads, and that was considered a great feat. But then, 1969, as soon as I joined the temple, then immediately they made me, well, two things. I became the head pujari, and I became the treasurer. Burjan, actually, what happened is that Burjan, he was leaving. He was going to open a center down in North Carolina at a university there with Toshan Prabhu, Toshan Krishna Prabhu. And so as soon as I came to the temple, I moved into the temple, then they took over his position as the treasurer. And then Rupanuga Prabhu, who was the president there, during that summer he told another devotee and myself that we had to go get jobs. So that was the last thing I wanted to do. But luckily I was reading these letters that Prabhupada was sending to Tamil Krishnamurti about how he wanted us to do Sankirtan. So we made a party. We thought we'd try it. So we went out downtown Buffalo with around seven or eight devotees, and we had kirtan downtown. And we went around with conch shells, and people would throw money into the conch shells. And then we'd give him a magazine. So we came back after that, and to my amazement, we had collected $27. So $27 was actually considered, we could actually support the temple on that. So after some time, we used to go downtown every day. There would be a kirtan party. Some devotees would distribute magazines. And I was the biggest distributor. I simply go to, especially Well, the little old black ladies downtown go to them, here, take one of these. And they go, what is it? It's about love of God. And they go, I love God. And I go, great, give a donation. And then they go for their money. Sure, I'll give you a donation. How much? Oh, just give anything. So then they go for it. They say, give a dollar, give a dollar. They go, okay, I'll give you a dollar. And that way we were supporting the temple. But then after some time, after some years, remember, I wasn't always so enthusiastic about going and staying here time. But I remember sometimes I'd drop off the devotees on Sankirtan, and then I'd have to go out for book distribution myself. And that was about the last thing I wanted to do. Because that's the nature of the mind. It's not always encouraging one to perform devotional service. So I think I've mentioned this before, that sometimes I'd drop the devotees off and immediately my mind would immediately attack me. I remember also when I finally got to do the airports. The first airport I was doing full-time was Milwaukee. So Milwaukee Airport was just above Chicago, around, I guess, a couple of hundred miles above Chicago. I was supposed to come to India. This was 1976, I think, on Radha Damodar. It was 75, for the opening of the Krishna Balaram Temple here. So at the last moment, I had everything, my visa and everything. Tripura Maharaj called me up and told me, he said, we have a special program for you. Instead of going to India, you have the opportunity to do the airport in Milwaukee. So I said, oh, great. And I went out with another devotee, myself. We went out there, Sankar Pandit and myself. So this is in the middle of January, February. And it was a wonderful airport because it was the one airport where the only flights that were coming in from Chicago and Denver and all the other places where devotees were working full-time to get the heat up. So we went out there very enthusiastically and we were collecting on the average around $20 a day, working 8 hours. I mean, it was the first experience when I went up to shake someone's hand. Instead of giving me the hand, the person took a cigarette, a cigarette that was lit, and went like this, put it out of my hand. But in any case, after a while, we got a little bit more expert. And then we started to go outside and got a little warmer. When it went up to 0 degrees, not Celsius, Fahrenheit, I guess that would be around -10 degrees, and everyone thought it was a warm spell, so everyone was outside walking, and then we started to go outside and do the lots. But the point is that, then they transferred me to Chicago after that. After some time I wound up in Chicago. And Chicago was actually a very nice airport. It was one of the busiest airports in the world. But it was also, probably, especially at that time, it was one of the most difficult in terms of our relationships with the people working there and the public, for different reasons. Like every 5 minutes there used to be this sound through the terminal throughout the whole airport. You go, ding, 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 ding. Attention! Attention, ladies and gentlemen. I remember the first time I heard it. I thought, wow. There you go. Attention, attention, ladies and gentlemen. You may be approached by a person who's, in the airport, but please be informed that these people are not authorized by the airport or the airport authority. Thank you very much. So every once in a while someone would come up and go, those are the guys. We're calling the police. They know you're out here. So, and then the usual thing is that sometimes people come by with a briefcase, swinging the briefcase, trying to hit us with it. So that was some of our daily pastimes. So I used to think that, you know, this is, I used to go out to the airport thinking, well, this is probably my last day. Because we were having, even in the temple, the devotees were talking about how the war is coming soon. And this is all part of the test of Lord Chaitanya, you know. I kind of felt like I was a kamikaze, just reading books for Lord Chaitanya, or Kusit's last stand. But then after some time, I remember when I go out there, I go into my Tai Chi stand before I start distributing. You know, in the middle of the airport, you go into the Tai Chi, excuse me, sir. But then after some time, I started to realize that all the fear and anxiety was simply a waste of time. That actually people, the karmas especially, they pick up on what everyone's mood is. And if one is fearful and anxiety, then immediately those who are demons, they take advantage of that. But if one is very enthusiastic, then the demons become afraid. So then I change my mood. So I become much more aggressive. In the sense, a little bit more fearless. And then everything started to turn out much better. Until they came out with these things called the clickers. You know about the clickers? Yeah, everything was going nicely, except in spite of all the announcements. You know, every 5 minutes it was ding, 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 ding. Attention, attention, ladies and gentlemen. So the airport workers became convinced that we were demons, that we were some unholy god, you know, unholy people out there, you know, simply cheating people. So then someone got this idea that the way of putting an end to us at the airport was to distribute clickers on the airplanes as the people were coming in. So they would have announcements on the airplanes about us, and then they'd pass out free clickers to people on the airplanes. And they had instructions that as soon as you see a person with books, distributing books, you go up there and go, click, 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 click. I would distribute a book to someone, and immediately they go, oh yeah, there's a nice book. And then immediately you see 20, 30 people surrounding you going, click, 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 click. The person would become bewildered, what's going on? And I was starting to tell the people, they're clicking so you can take a book. And so people kept on buying books. And then they got completely fried, the airport workers. So then they had another technique. They come up to us and they grab the person before he can give a donation. Say, you're being ripped off, guy, run, get out of here. You know, these guys are a bunch of crooks. And then you can, after a little while, our collections went down from around $300 to $500 a day to around $20 or $10 a day. It suddenly decreased. But the point is that we left the airport, decided to do other things, but eventually we came back to the airport again and our techniques changed a little bit more straightforward. Somehow or another things have changed quite a bit. But the point I'm trying to make is that these are just stories, a little humorous, but especially by this book distribution, which is sometimes an austerity, it's a learning by the fire of ordeal how to become more and more fixed on Krishna consciousness and more develop the proper mood, not only towards Krishna, but also learning how to deal with Krishna's energies in such a way as to maximize the spreading of Krishna consciousness. So in that endeavor, especially, one becomes purified and develops a kind of greed, not just in the beginning. Sometimes it's the greed for having your name, so that when your name is announced, everyone goes, oh, and or they go, Jai, Jai. And you go, yeah, it's all right. I know I'm shocking the age, but give a little credit to Krishna also. So that type of attitude, of course, is there sometimes. But still, after some time, one realizes that whether people praise you or not, that every day you're going to be back out there. You have to start all over again. Whether you did, you know, $1,000 a day before, you did $50 a day before, you have to go out there the next day and you're, you know, Dasi or Das so-and-so again, instead of the superstar you were yesterday when they announced the score. So in that way, one actually experiences that by distributing books, one actually feels himself developing a desire to distribute more books. And that feeling, that greed to distribute more books, that gradually that develops some kind of a spontaneous type of feeling where one feels like he can stay out there forever and wants to distribute more and more books. So sometimes we have marathons to increase that feeling. But the point is that, as Prabhupada wrote to one devotee, he said, the opinion of Ramaswar that book distribution is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's leela in the mood of the gopis trying to give Krishna to others or trying to bring others to Krishna, that is the correct understanding. So this Sankirtan movement, especially this book distribution and anything that supports it, is actually the best way of developing the intense eagerness and greed that will bring one very quickly to the state of pure love for Krishna, Krishna prema. It's a practical method of developing the actual feelings by which one will become attached to Krishna in the process of serving Krishna. Others, hearing about Krishna intensely, for ourselves would probably take a long, long time to purify ourselves. Because purification, this Sharanagrati, the desire to rely upon Krishna, to surrender to Krishna, comes about generally through very practical experiences. Not simply by trying to just read books, this may take a long, long time. Because generally we'll misunderstand. But when one is put in, when voluntarily puts himself into some difficulty for the preaching work of Lord Chaitanya, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will very quickly give us understanding or realization by which we can execute our service better and better. The one criteria is that we have to develop the proper attitude on book distribution. Now generally, when one goes out, because of our misconceptions, we're very fearful. Therefore, immediately we realize that actually I'm completely attached to my body. I'm afraid someone's going to attack my body, or someone won't like my body, or they'll criticize my body. So immediately we become a little fearful. So as one realizes that, then he has to make a decision either to continue to be fearful or to simply allow himself to be utilized as an instrument for Lord Krishna. And then generally what happens after some time of trying to distribute books, one feels more at home, especially after one starts distributing some books or he sees others distributing books, one develops more confidence and enthusiasm. And then sometimes what happens is that one starts feeling himself to be empowered. Sir, stop. Yes, sir. Can't take one of these. Yes, sir. Give a donation. How much? See what you got. Can you give all that? No, I can't give all that. Well, give half at least. All right. No problem. So then one actually sees how much mercy, how much one can actually be empowered by Lord Chaitanya. And then sometimes one may become a little puffed up, but then due to the mercy of associating with the devotees, generally the devotees won't allow one to stay puffed up for too long. So in this way, by the Sankirtan movement, gradually we can actually get some practical experience of what is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela and make tangible progress in going back to Godhead. Also this book distribution especially is very tangible service to Krishna. Of course all these other services are also Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. Cooking for the deities, serving prasadam to people. These are all part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela that attract one to Krishna consciousness. So the more we participate, we don't have to be great scholars But if we devote our energy in a practical way to serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, then all these perfections will gradually be attained one after another. So I just want to read a little bit about nectar of instruction. So in the end here, at the end of text 11, or at the end of text 10, it mentions how Srimati Radharani is the best of all the different servitors. So after taking the devotional service under the regular principles, a person may come to the platform of spontaneous love of Godhead, following the footsteps of great devotees like Narada, Sanak, and Sanatana. Of all these devotees, the gopis are recognized as superior because they do not know anything other than satisfying Krishna. There is no difference between thinking of Krishna and associating with him. Rather, Vipralambaseva, thinking of Krishna in separation, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did, is far better than serving Krishna directly. Out of all these exalted gopis, Srimati Radharani is the highest. Srila Rupa Goswami concludes that Srimati Radharani is the most exalted devotee of Krishna, and that Hakun Lake, Sri Radha Kun, is the most exalted place. So then in text 11 it says, Krishna's love for Radha Kun and Srimati Radharani is the same in all respects. The conclusion is that to live on the banks of Radha Kun, to bathe there daily, constitutes the highest perfection of devotional service. By serving Radha Kun, one can get an opportunity to become assistant of Srimati Radharani under the eternal guidance of the gopis. So, how are we serving Radha Kun? Did Prabhupada ever recommend that we should go and live in Radha Kun and bathe there daily? And related? Yes, but how is that practically? Yes, certainly. Especially Radha Kun represents, Srimati Radharani represents the highest devotional feelings, Mahabhava. And anything, especially the water that comes in contact with her, Radha Kun, is considered to be non different from Srimati Radharani. So by maintaining contact, especially with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by serving his mission, actually, as one devotee, Advaita Acharya, said, also other devotees mentioned it, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, himself mentioned, he said that my mind is Vrindavan, he was dancing in Rathiyatra. And Advaita Acharya said that wherever you are, there's everything is there. That is Vrindavan. So where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, then Radha Kun, Shyama Kun, everything is there, all of Vrindavan is there. So by dedicating one's mission, as Prabhupada says, that one should have no goal in life, save and accept to act in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. And working in such a way, one should think only that I've been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna. And in this way, one will naturally think of Krishna. That is perfect Krishna consciousness. So the more one becomes dedicated to the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then the more one gets the opportunity to associate with him through Leela Smaranam. And by that Leela Smaranam, by associating with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through Leela Smaranam, one will also, in the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, experiencing his mood, be able to enter into the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Especially because we ourselves, we can't generate independently that feelings of separation. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has already displayed the highest degrees of separation. And so if we associate with him, we can get a little bit of that feeling, and that will immediately bring us to all perfection. And how do we associate with someone? Through service. That the more we serve him, then the more he will reveal himself to us. The more he reveals himself to us, the more we get Radha and Krishna's association in that feeling of separation. So, we'll stop there. Are there any questions? I'm sure all the devotees have so many transcendental stories and tell about book distribution. But I remember when I was going out to, I was doing Philadelphia one year with Vaishasika during the Christmas marathon. And his quota was we were having a competition. So I was trying to do 125 big books a day, which at that time was quite a bit because we weren't passing out stacks. It was like one or two at a time. And I remember by the end of the marathon, I was so exhausted just by carrying the books around, running around the airport, because it's a huge airport, that the only thing I could do is walk up to people and hand them the book. But so Krishna seems to empower you more and more, so I just walk up to people, hand the book, and people would take out their wallets and give me a donation. And I just go up to the next person. I was so exhausted, I couldn't say anything. So that's one gets some practical experience. I remember one time I was trying to work I was going to San Antonio Airport before it was legal. They told us to go out there and try and distribute, although undercover. So it was so intense for me. I was just going up to people. I remember I went up to one person, I felt Krishna was giving me so much energy. So I handed the person the book, and immediately, without saying anything, he took out his wallet and gave me a donation. It's just the intensity of it. So those kind of experiences definitely deepen one's realization of faith and Krishna consciousness. Yes?
So how are things different in the airports now?
In America?
Yeah.
Well, probably the devotees are a little bit more well-mannered. Before they used to do something, they used to give a lot of people change, or sometimes they forgot to give the exact amount of change back to people. And I guess the airport workers especially became a little disturbed. You know, when the people were giving hundreds or $200 donations for a book. Sometimes like that. And you know, nowadays we're a little bit more mellow in our approach. People just, generally they give what they want to give. We just ask for donations. It's a little bit more civilized. Yeah.
Are you having a test?
Yes, tomorrow's a test.